You allow calves to grow up in a social group and a social herd with adult animals where they learn a lot of skills. And of course, from a nutritional point of view, they get to drink as much as they want whenever they want. And they can suckle, which actually satisfies the sucking reflex. And there are also farmers who report huge health benefits for the calves, like less diarrhea, for example, or calves recovering on their own from diarrhea when they have it.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Boost digestive health, performance, and profitability with Digesterone Prime, a feed additive that enhances digestion and immune function in dairy calves. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime. Exalit, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Agrarian Solutions, research-backed microbial solutions for healthier, higher-performing livestock. AgriComfort, the cow comfort specialist, because her longevity is your legacy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wyzenetics. I'm Dr. Liz Eckelkamp, an associate professor and dairy extension specialist at the University of Tennessee. I'm joined today by Dr. Margaret Van Holt Winker, I'm pretty sure I just butchered her last name, so forgive me for that, a postdoctoral researcher at the Institute of Animal Welfare and Animal Husbandry of the Friedrich Loeffler Institute in Celle, Germany. Margaret earned her PhD from Wageningen University in 2021 after receiving her bachelor's and master's also from Wageningen University. In 2022, she joined the Friedrich Loeffler Institute at the Institute of Animal Welfare and Animal Husbandry. Her research focuses on contributing to the development of animal husbandry systems in which animals can express more natural behavior without compromising their health. By these means, she hopes to enhance the livestock animal welfare. She is currently working with prolonged cow-calf contact and working with animal scientists and stakeholders toward optimal housing and management of herds with prolonged contact and understanding what type of contact is most beneficial for animal welfare. Welcome, Margaret. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So your current research and background focus on cow-calf contact systems, including serving on the advisory board for the Transform DairyNet project in Europe. Can you tell us a little bit more about what prolonged cow-calf contact is and how we might incorporate that onto a farm?
So prolonged cow-calf contact is, I would say, contact that sustains longer than about 3 days. Usually in the field, we talk about several weeks up to several months where dairy calves get to stay with a dairy cow rather than early separation directly after birth. There are large variations, so every farm is basically doing something different because you can provide the contact in different ways. You can, for example, allow for full contact where calves are suckling the cow, they're joining the herd, or they're inside the barn. Alternatively, you can also allow for contact where there is no suckling possible, which is called partial contact. So there's like some form of interaction, but the calf cannot reach the other. So the farmer is still able to take the milk in the milking parlor. You can also allow for contact full time, which basically means 24/7 outside of milking hours, compared to part-time contact where it's only during the night, only during the day, maybe a couple of hours after milking. And there's options to leave the calf with the own mother, so the own dam, or with a foster cow, where one cow takes care of several calves. So generally, I think we see that cow-calf contact is usually allowed for 2 to 3 months. After that, the calves really take a lot of milk away, which makes it hard to make it profitable.
So that kind of ties into my next question. Kind of like I mentioned, I'm an extension specialist. And I think if I told some of my dairy farmers to leave cows on calf, they would look at me like I'd grown a second head. So how do you overcome that hurdle when you're talking to producers? And how do some of the benefits potentially outweigh some of those costs?
I think it is indeed a tricky point because it's so different from what we're doing, right? What we're used to doing, right? Against the traditional system. But I think there are also a lot of win-wins in this system. So I think, first of all, there is, of course, animal welfare. You allow the animals to express much more of their natural behavior, which means for cows to express their maternal behavior, for which they're highly motivated. You allow calves to grow up in a social group, in a social herd with adult animals, where they learn a lot of skills. And of course, from a nutritional point of view, they get to drink as much as they want, whenever they want. And they can suckle, which actually satisfies the sucking reflex. And there are also farmers who report huge health benefits for the calves, like less diarrhea, for example, or calves recovering on their own from diarrhea when they have it. I think there's a big part from what we see, especially in Europe, is that the consumer is very much aware about early separation and dislikes it. So a lot of farmers also can sell their milk for a better price by allowing for cow-calf contact. But it is a system that only works when you really want it. So I think it's not a system that we can put regulations on and force farmers to do it, because I think the key to success is the intrinsic motivation of farmers who are willing to do this system because it's so different. You basically have to learn to do dairy again because it's different way of looking at your animals, different way of working with the animals. So it's not for everybody, let's say it like that.
Help your calves with digestive health and boost performance. By enhancing feed intake and supporting gut health, Digesterone Prime boosts your dairy calves' immunity and growth while increasing profitability. Plus, it has no withdrawal periods, making it a smart choice for your feeding program. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime.
So when you you talked about some of the potential health benefits for calves, have y'all tracked any health benefits or health risks on the maternal side? Because my brain immediately goes to mastitis.
Right. So far, we do not overall see that cows who are being suckled have higher have more issues with mastitis. So in my study, we, for example, didn't see difference at all between the groups with early separation or those being suckled or having cow-calf contact. I also checked blood parameters in the cows because sometimes you might think the negative energy balance might be even worse when the calf is also suckling milk besides being milked in a milking parlor. But also there we found no effects of suckling on the health of the cows. There are some farmers who report that after birth, the cows recover better. But I have not seen real data on that. So I think for cows, it doesn't affect much their health. Whereas for calves, it can go in both directions, depending on how you manage the system.
Mm-hmm. So how do we manage it right and avoid managing it wrong?
Well, what I've heard from farmers, I talked to many over the last 10 years. And I also, of course, did experiments myself. So I got to manage those calves myself as well. I think the first thing is very important is that you have a disease-free status on your farm for Joni's disease, Salmonella, BVD virus. And that you have a closed herd because that keeps the animals most safe. Because if you have such diseases in your herd, they transfer super quick. I think it's also very important to closely monitor your calves, which is basically observing, right? Because usually you're feeding them and you see how well they are drinking the milk. Is there any diarrhea lying on the straw around the calf? So you have to much more observe the calves. Regularly be around to see how they are suckling, how the interactions are, how lively they are. It's also important to check your barn climate, for example. We don't want it to be too drafty because then the calves also can get sick. So to avoid it, you can put like wind protection or calf jackets. It's important to have very dry bedding. And usually what we see on farms is that we have those calf creep areas, which is a small area of the barn where only calves can come. So they can lie without contact from cows. They can there find their calf starter, some solid feed or hay, their own water. That usually helps. And I think it's very important also to monitor the colostrum intake. You should not just leave them, let them be, and hope everything will work out. You really need to make sure, can the calf actually find the udder? Is the udder not too low, for example, with Holstein Friesian cows? Do they suckle the colostrum usually within 6 hours? Otherwise, you would need to assist or give a bottle, for example. And also the hygiene in the maternity pen is very important, because usually we recommend farmers to leave them in the maternity pen for 3 to 5 days so they can really bond together. The calf is not drinking colostrum from an alien cow, or a cow is stealing the calf away. And therefore, that makes it sometimes hard to keep this pen dry and clean throughout those days. But that would actually provide a good start for the calves as well.
So that sounds like a lot of the same kind of general best management practices we would recommend, right? From like getting started, like, hey, these things are still important. Can't just leave baby with mama and let them go off.
Yes.
So kind of what you described, it almost sounds like you need a full barn within a barn to be able to fully incorporate at least housing them together consistently. What about the partial contact that you talked about earlier, right? Where they could be by the adult cows, but not necessarily have access to nurse.
Right. So in my PhD, we tested two forms of this type of contact. So first of all, we had cows wearing udder nets, which means that the calf could actually be in the barn, but not suckle. I think it's quite labor intensive, and I'm not sure how good it was for the cows, because they let go of their milk as soon as their calf stands next to them, which is not particularly something you want. And the other way we did it, which I think might work better, is where we had the calf pens like housed directly next to the cow pen. Oh, so there was a small wall of, I think, about 1.20 meters or so. And the cow could come by, put her head over the wall, and the calf, it would be standing. They could interact. They could lick each other. They could see each other. And in that way, you can still allow for some form of contact, which is, of course, limited, but perhaps better than nothing, because I still had cows who spent quite some time next to those calf boxes interacting with their calf. Even one cow lying down on the concrete, sort of wanting to lie with her calf. So I think there's still some cows who have very strong maternal instincts and would still go for that type of contact. And it could be maybe some kind of compromise, because you would still be feeding the calf on your own. But there is some form of contact possible.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Dairy Podcast Show presented by Wyzenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends and family. You can also turn on notifications from our channel so you never miss an episode. Please feel free to leave us your comments at any time, because we want to hear from you. So are there any other kind of prerequisites we would need to think about for a farm to allow prolonged cow-calf contact, aside from being really good managers? Seems like step one, right? Kind of already having excellent calf care and a good eye for animals, beyond like not necessarily relying on technology, but being a good cow person, being a good calf manager, and already having a lot of the basics covered. Are there any other prereqs that you would need to think about before you recommended a farmer look into this?
I think you don't need to worry too much about your barn. The system works in both freestyle barns as well as open pack systems. I think for open pack system, you would need about at least 10 square meter per cow to allow them for enough space. If you have like a freestyle barn where you have slatted floors, for example, it's important to check the slat width, that it's not too wide so the calf's feet don't get stuck, for example. And of course, you have to check your barn for like dangerous spots. Is the manure pit open? Can the calf fall in? Then you would need to somehow put a fence around it to protect the calf. Anyway, it's good to check for spots where calves can escape, because you don't want them to be running around freely, especially when you're close to like highway or something. But I think in general, the system can work in both systems. Usually we see, if you have like a freestyle barn, that the calves are lying down in front of the cow's head. So at the head space where they usually lunge their head forward. So you would need to have enough space there, about 0.8 to a meter, that the calf has space to lie in front of the cow. But I've also seen them cuddling up inside the cubicle with their mothers. or just three calves in one cubicle. So maybe have an animal lying space ratio of 1:1, that at least there is some space where calves can steal some cubicles away. Other than that, it might be helpful if you're close to a city where you can sell your milk, for example, in supermarkets, farmer markets, or at least be close to the consumers if you want to directly sell from your farm.
Yeah, we do a lot with value-added dairy options, so basically doing on-farm processing here at Tennessee. And that's always one of our questions is, how far away are you from your target market? And are they actually going to be able to come to your farm, or do they want to buy it at their local grocery store? And most of our research finds that most of our consumers want to buy it at their local grocery store. Not sure what y'all have found there, but the convenience factor is high here in the southeast of the U.S. You mentioned earlier being able to use their own dam or doing a foster cow for prolonged cow-calf contact. And I'd say that idea of a foster cow is maybe more, not accepted, but like known is probably a better term for that in the U.S., right? Like, so you have a cow that maybe doesn't do well in a freestall, doesn't produce a ton of milk, and you end up running her as a foster with the calves. So are there benefits to one versus the other? Have y'all looked into that a lot?
I think overall, foster cows are understudied when we look into animal welfare research, whereas we actually see that indeed also in Europe, the practice is adopted quite a lot by farmers, because it's much easier to lose the milk from one cow in your herd or several ones than compared to the whole herd. So it's also a financial thing, I guess. I think we should not forget, if one of the reasons you're doing it is for consumer demand, that you're still separating the calf from the own dam. So there is actually still early separation, and the calf is just being transferred to another cow, but the mother is still losing her calf. And I've done motivation tests to see how motivated cows are to actually reunite with their calf after half-day contact, so not seeing them during the day. And the suckled group had a very high motivation. They pushed the weighted gate much more than the groups that were not suckled or those that were early separated. So it actually shows that cows are still highly motivated to be with their calves. Even some cows in the early separated group were still pushing quite some weights, which actually shows that even then they still would like to be with their calves. So we should not forget that in foster cow systems. Also, not every cow wants to be a foster cow, because I think it can be quite intense if you have 3 to 4 hungry calves hanging around. So we also sometimes see more teeth damages in those cows, which can also be, of course, painful and not good for her other health, especially when you're using more lower producing cows and the calves are quite hungry. This can be an issue. And the question still remains whether those calves are truly adopted by those cows. Usually you see that the cow has her own calf plus 2 to 3 others, and her own calf is getting maternal care. They're licking, they're lying together, whereas the other ones are only getting a full belly. They just drink from behind, but they're not really receiving maternal care, where actually the system is maybe designed for to have this maternal care as well. And that's still something we have to study, to what extent they actually receive maternal care in such a foster cow system. But I think from a practical side, we often see producers adopting foster cow systems.
Imagine a dry off day that doesn't clog your parlor. Choose optimal dry cow care with AHV StopLac. StopLac delivers operational ease and parlor efficiency at dry off with one dose and one touch for a gentle, comfortable transition into the dry period. Learn more at ahvint.com.
Y'all might not have an answer for this yet, but again, thinking about potential producer questions, because it's hard for me to take that hat off. How much milk yield are farmers losing if they have prolonged cow-calf contact? So maybe just that 2 to 3 month period instead of extending even longer than that, but keeping all cows and calves together in a barn, what does that do to that yield overall?
So in my study, we allowed for 8 weeks of suckling, 10 weeks of cow-calf contact. And then on average, our full contact cows were producing 12 liters a day less than those that were not suckled. And there are even some studies who say it can go up to 15 liters a day. Because actually that's also the natural milk intake of a calf, right? Usually we have those feeding schedules. We are basically feeding calves at around 10% of their body weight, but that is at the rather low end of the scale, I would say, because naturally they would drink about 20% of their body weight. So in this financial calculation, we also have to consider that maybe we are like underfeeding the calves at the moment. And if you would feed them also at an ad libitum system, for example, the cost might also look different. And of course, milk replacer is at least here cheaper than whole milk. So we also have to consider that when we do the calculations, that maybe the system where we're comparing it to is not very fair in that sense.
That's fair.
And maybe good to add is that there are several studies who also show that the milk fat is lower in the milk from suckled cows, which can, of course, also have a financial impact if you're paid by your milk content.
Are y'all still on a quota system in Europe, or has it gone more to more of a total production plus components system?
Yeah, the quotum is gone. We have like free market. Mm-hmm.
So very similar to us, because the part of the country where I live, we're very much based on total pounds of production with fat kind of thrown in. So I do think that those would be some potential struggle points for some of my farmers to overcome. Mm-hmm. What does adoption of this practice look like in Europe so far? Like how, like for, as a percentage, how many farmers are considering this right now or actively involved?
I would say it's rather low. It also depends a bit on the country. Mm-hmm. For example, I'm not so quick in head calculations, but like from the Dutch farmers, we have about 50 allowed for cow-calf contact. So that's, of course, a very small part. What we are aware of in Germany, the adoption is a bit higher, but we also at the same time have more farms. And then especially in the south, we have much more small family farms, where it's, I think, easier to implement the system than on larger herds, unless you create like small group pens inside your barn to keep a good eye on the calves. But I couldn't say like what is the uptake in Europe overall.
So you'd mentioned some of the kind of willingness to push a gate out of the way to get back to their calves if they had been suckled or if they could just kind of been instantly separated. So what kind of stress impacts are you seeing during weaning and separation when that happens at eight weeks or 10 weeks, as opposed to a few hours of life? How is that changing in the calves and the cows?
So I think overall we would say that this distress about weaning and separation after this bond has actually been built up is a major welfare issue. We still don't know what is the best way to do it, to reduce this stress, because we see the animals being very restless, very vocal, wanting to reunite. It also very much depends how you are doing it. So you can do abrupt weaning and separation. So one day to the next, no more milk, no more mother. Whereas you can also try to do more of a gradual process where you separate the moment of milk loss and the moment of the loss of social contact. Because usually calves are taken out of the herd, so they sometimes even lose contact to other adult animals, to younger peers where they might have been created friendships with, and of course a new physical environment. So usually the most common ways that we see in practice is using either nose flaps, where you insert a nose flap into the nose of the calf so it can no longer suckle from the udder, but it can still be in the herd. So it first loses the milk and then afterwards it loses the contact from the mother. Although we see that those nose flaps are rather abrupt weaning as well, right? So they're like in the candy shop all day long, Holstein Friesians produce so much milk and then from one day to the next, it's gone. And we see that the uptake of like solid feeds is a bit later. They start very early, but in very small amounts. And therefore, also, the rumen might not be fully developed to suddenly switch to this solid feed. And we also found, in my study at least, also some wounds in the nasal cavity of the calves from this pressure from the nose flap. So I wouldn't recommend it. Whereas the other system we often see is a fence line system, where calves are placed behind a fence. First, they can still drink when the cow positions herself next to the fence. And later on, you can close off the fence. And then there's only physical contact, for example, before you remove them. So by those means, we try to gradually reduce the contact. But still, we see distress in those animals. And even when we do it after 6 months, or when we do it after partial contact or part-time contact. So that is still a question, how to do it right. But I also think we should not underestimate the silence after early separation. Because for a calf, it's very natural to hide and to not make a sound because it's a hider. So that, of course, is different when they're older and they're more vocal. And also for cows, I wouldn't underestimate their silence either. Maybe there are things going on that we don't know about when it comes to, for example, their mental state when they lose the calf directly after birth.
So, you know, we're always limited by what can we actually measure. But do you have any theories or things that you would like to measure to better quantify it besides vocalization, pacing, willingness to move weight out of the way? Are there other measurements you wish you had aside from talking to the cow and the calf, which I don't know how far away we are from that, but probably quite a ways.
So you mean specifically around weaning and separation or
just trying to understand, you know, their effective state, right? So if you could measure anything, what would it be?
Oh, I think play behavior is a very good indicator for positive welfare. When calves are well fed and they have enough space. And this is also what we see more both in cows and calves, that they express play behavior. And I think that is a good indicator for positive welfare. So that's actually maybe a good sign that we're on the right track.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Want a herd management software designed for you? BovaSync is helping herds by managing data faster and easier. Contact BovaSync today to learn more. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Accurately measure individual cow feed efficiency with the newest advancement from AffiMilk. Visit AffiMilk.com to learn more. That's AffiMilk.com. Evonik Animal Nutrition, sciencing the global food challenges. Cow Manager, ahead of the herd together. Safe, simple, stop lack. Contact AHV for comfortable dry cow care. Reduce dyscalcemia and simplify transition cow care with Cowbell Pro from Chemlock Nutrition. Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to deliver cost-effective solutions for the animal health and productivity challenges you face. For conventional or organic production systems, Natural Biologics can help support rumen health and immune function, mitigate pathogens, and increase production efficiency. Visit naturalbiologics.com to learn more.
Margaret, this has been a great discussion, and I have learned so much about prolonged cow-calf contact and how we might incorporate into dairy systems and what y'all are working on. I do have a few more questions for you before we end the episode. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So question one, what is your favorite dairy or welfare-related book or resource?
So I would still tailor it to cow-calf contact. Mm-hmm. There is a book called A Dairy Story. It's from David and Wilma Finlay from Scotland. They run the Rainton Farm, and it's about their journey to allow for cow-calf contact and how it all started during their transition and how the farm is now and how they experienced that. So I think if you're interested in what does it mean to switch to such a system, this is a very interesting book to read. And if you would like to know more practical things, like what do I need to adjust in my barn to make it work? There is the Cow Bonded Calf Rearing and Dairy Farming Practical Guide from the Tunin Institute, which basically gives you all the guidelines you need to apply it in your system.
I'm going to have to go find both of those. And then outside of dairy and welfare, what is your favorite book?
At the moment, I have a young daughter and I have to parent her. And then I realized, how do I actually do this? This is also maybe a maternal care that we sort of maybe lost track from our instincts. So a book that I very much like is called Hunt-Gather-Parent. It's about what we can learn from ancient cultures about raising Happy Helpful Kids. It's from Michaeleen Douglas. And it's very interesting to read like what parenting actually looked like in like indigenous people, for example, and what we can learn from that in our Western culture.
Yeah, I have a 19-month-old little boy, and I am pregnant with my second. So this sounds like another book I need to go find, because that actually sounds incredibly interesting.
It's super interesting, yeah.
Is it in English, or will I have to get it translated?
No, it's in English. I think she's maybe even from the States. But yeah.
Okay, I will have to look that up. So last question. In your opinion, what sets successful dairy or welfare professionals apart from those that are less successful?
I think when they approach the one welfare concept, where we are not only focusing on, for example, improving animal welfare, but also considering farmers' well-being. And I think many of the measures that we take to improve animal welfare in the end actually also lead to improved farmer welfare or worker safety or job satisfaction. So I think keeping that in mind brings success for both parties.
It's a really good answer. Not that there was a right one or a wrong one. That was just a really good answer. So that'll conclude another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show presented by Wyzenetics. Dr. Von Holtwinker, thank you again for sharing your time and expertise. And thank you to all of you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is very important to us. Until next time, this is Dr. Liz Eckelkamp from the Dairy Podcast Show, signing off. Have a dairy great day.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.